The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey friends, and welcome once again to Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd Radio Network. It is my privilege today to get to talk to a young lady that I've met through a friend who knows her from World Magazine. Emily Bells is a writer for World. She lives in the Manhattan area of New York City, and it is such a delight to have Emily as my guest today on my program. Welcome, Emily.
Thank you. It's so good to be with you, Mike.
You know, I've been a fan of World Magazine for a number of years. Back when it first came out, we used to get it at the church that I was a part of, and the articles are crisply written and very timely and so helpful. A biblical worldview, that was something that was kind of, I think, the terminology and everything about that was kind of new back when World first came out. You just didn't hear it as often as you hear it today. But you guys are living right there in the Big Apple, and you're writing on stories that really matter to every person, not just believers, but to every person. But your insights are so very helpful. So thank you, and to all of your colleagues at World for what you do on a daily basis.
Oh, that's really kind. I appreciate it.
So Emily is a believer. Tell me a little bit about your background. I know you're living in New York City right now, but that's not where you're originally from. Give us your story, Emily.
Also, I grew up in Asheville, North Carolina, which is in the Blue Ridge Mountains. And that is actually the headquarters of World Magazine. So World is in my DNA, I guess. My uncle founded the magazine back in 1986, which is the year I was born. So World and I were born the same year. And I grew up in a Presbyterian family. So I feel like there wasn't a day where I felt I didn't know the Lord. So I'm really grateful to my parents for the upbringing that they gave me. I would say that, it was that gradual revelation of who God is and learning more about the Bible that led me into genuine faith. And so it's been a pretty boring testimony to that extent, but I'm grateful for it.
I love boring testimonies. I love it when I talk, when I get to talk to somebody that has been raised as you were. And my goodness, you used the right term when you said the DNA in your family. I had no idea that your family was part of the origin of this magazine. I did not know that.
Yeah, my uncle really had a unique vision, I think, for incorporating journalism and a Christian worldview. And he wanted to make it serious journalism, not just PR for Christian nonprofits, which I think is kind of the temptation when you're writing for a Christian audience. I think his vision was really unique in the 80s, and it was something that people were hungry for.
When you look back at your own life, what's the earliest memory that you have where you could honestly say that your faith was something that had become very personal and not just something that you had heard or you learned from your parents?
That's a great question. I think it was probably fifth grade or middle school, you know, when you're a young teenager and you're dealing with a lot of how to define your identity and who you are and all of those questions. I think I had really good teachers at this Christian school I went to in Asheville who encouraged us to, write about things that we were thinking about, write about spiritual matters and explore the Bible that way. So I think actually writing things out, I mean, I didn't know at that time that I would be a writer later, but writing out what my inner thoughts were and seeing that through the lens of the Bible was useful for me to make that a reality and, you know, putting the kind of ambiguous things in your head onto paper was really helpful for me to make that faith a reality.
Now, when you would have been a younger, young lady, just still in school and all, that's when the term peer pressure was really kind of becoming mainstream and everyone was hearing about it. You, at that age, had to be one that was going against the flow of your own school and schoolmates and all of that. How do you look back on those times? Do you remember that as being a time where you had a lot of friends, or did you feel often alone?
Well, I think, you know, going back to what I said about my testimony being kind of boring, I mean, I was at a Christian school, so I did have a lot of encouragement in that way to have Christian friends around me and Christian teachers who were influencing me. But, you know, there's always, whatever setting you're in, there's always temptations either way. So I would say that it was kind of the normal teenager problems of gossiping too much or, you know, just getting into trouble after school at your job with people who maybe were not part of your normal friend set or not people that your parents knew. It's all the kind of same stuff that every teenager mm-hmm. goes through, I think. But yeah, there wasn't any dramatic moment of me being a hero as a Christian. I don't think. I think it was I was privileged to have so much Christian foundation and a Christian environment around me that encouraged me in that way.
I think that is such a wonderful thing. I often think of the joke that I heard years ago about a granny that stood up in the days of a Teen Challenge up in New York and was giving her testimony, and no one could believe that she had done all the things. She said, God delivered me from murder. God delivered me from prostitution. God delivered me from a life of drug abuse. And then she paused and said, and he did all of that before I ever had to do any of it. So that is a wonderful deliverance right there, to be set free from the things that you just don't have to experience. That is the most marvelous testimony of all. And so kudos to your parents, to your family for a strong upbringing, and for a young lady that is now, as an adult, following hard after the Lord. That, in my book, Emily, is success. And I'm very proud of you and very proud of your parents for the wonderful job. And please pass along our thanks for their effort, their testimony, and their leadership in how you are now following the Lord and helping people all across America. That is tremendous. What advice would you have to young ladies today as you see culture going the way it's going right now, Emily? What advice would you have for young ladies who are maybe back to where you're talking about a moment ago, where they're dealing with the daily pressures? What advice would you have?
I think the most important thing is to be involved in a local church. It's very unglamorous, and it's not something that social media or the push towards individualization and looking at your phone all the time, it's not something that draws you to. But being involved in a local church and just in the daily difficulties of that produces fruit in a way that you will see 10 years down the line, 20 years down the line, 30 years down the line. It's not something that will be immediately gratifying. I mean, I hope it is, but it will be gratifying long term. So I really encourage young women who are thinking about how their lives will look on a day-to-day basis to pour themselves into the church as much as they can, starting in college. And, you know, I think that's a time when it's really easy to fall away from daily involvement in the church. But if you commit then to it being a regular part of your life, I think that habit will pay off big time down the road.
That's great advice. Emily Bells, a writer for World Magazine. Emily, when do you remember the thought of maybe following in the steps of your uncle and those that were from your family that were involved in this wonderful magazine called World Magazine? When did the thought hit you that you might want to become a professional journalist?
My mom, Mindy Bells, has been an international reporter for World for a long time. So we, as kids, went on trips with her all over the world. We went to China. We went to Africa. We saw a lot of the people that she was interviewing and what journalism looked like. So I think the concept of it was really familiar to me, and I saw how much of a difference it made to tell people's stories and how fun it was to get to go to all these different places and learn about things as a job. But I think I didn't consciously aspire to that. I think when I was in college, I stumbled into doing reporting for the student newspaper. And that's what led me to doing more writing and reporting for other newspapers. So in the summer times, I would work at local newspapers in North Carolina, and then I worked at a newspaper in DC and one here in New York. So it sort of just built on itself. And then after I graduated college, the Worlds offered me a job, or offered me an internship. And so I hadn't really at all considered working for the same magazine where my uncle and my mother worked. It seemed too strange. The publisher at the time had really encouraged me to not think about that, and that they just wanted to test it out and see how we did. And so I started reporting to them from DC, and it was a really good experience. And so it really just was one thing leading to another, rather than me having a big plan in mind to work for World. But it's worked out really well, and I'm so thankful for this job. And it's really fun to be able to, interview people and hear their stories and try to compile information in a way that's compelling and useful for our audience.
Well, you did a great job on the article that really drew me into wanting to talk with you, and that was an article that you've recently written on the COVID vaccine, especially the two COVID vaccines, the Pfizer and also the Moderna vaccine. And we're going to be talking about that more in our next segment. But this kind of writing that you did, as you put that story together, it's kind of almost like an investigative journalism. And that's a lot different than beat journalism, where you talk about current events and you might hit into details that would be maybe a little bit more deep than just surface. But the kind of article that you put together took a lot of research. And so that kind of investigative journalism is something that is so helpful for people who really want to know something and have a great desire and willingness to dig a little deeper into it. And that's exactly what you've done, isn't it?
Yeah, thank you for saying that. I think most people probably don't realize how much work goes into one of our magazine stories. I would say for this piece, I probably interviewed at least 20 people. And you do a lot of interviews that never make it into the final piece because you're kind of trying to find the right people to talk to and to quote and to get expertise from. So, yes, it is. We try to do really in-depth pieces that require a lot of work, but that will hopefully give you information that you wouldn't get elsewhere.
I'm talking today to Emily Bells. She is a senior writer for World Magazine, and talk about DNA coming from this family. Her mother was a writer, I guess still is a writer. Did I understand that right?
Yes, she still does international reporting for World. She was in Syria earlier this year, actually.
Oh, my. And her uncle was one of the original founders of World Magazine. And we'll be talking more. We'll give you the web address for World Magazine. If you're not familiar with it, I can tell you heartily, this is a magazine that you need to become familiar with. And it's something that I think in the days that are ahead, it's more important right now than ever that we have voices that are helping us through, sort through all the things that are going on in our country, in the world, through a lens of a biblical worldview. And that's exactly what they do, and they do it with excellence. This is Afternoons with Mike. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with my guest, Emily Bells from World Magazine, and we're going to be talking in specific about the article that she's written on the COVID-19 vaccine. Don't go away. I'll be right back. I'm on the line with Emily Bells. Emily is a professional journalist, a writer for World Magazine, and I think her title is senior writer. And boy, I tell you, it's so exciting to hear that your mom is still an international correspondent and your uncle, one of the founders of this magazine, and you're now part of New York City. Before we get into the story on the vaccine, I got to ask you, what was it like making the transition from the Blue Ridge Mountains to living in Manhattan?
Well, that's funny. There's a weird connection between Asheville and New York City that goes back to the Vanderbilts. Not to get into too much history, but the Vanderbilt family built a huge estate in Asheville.
And, sure.
So there's this weird rich New York families coming to Asheville connection, and that's continued through history. So there's a lot of transplanted New Yorkers in Asheville, actually. But of course, it's a very, very different experience living in Manhattan than in the mountains. And I've enjoyed it. I have a lot of family in Queens, and so it hasn't felt too strange to be here. It's felt like a home away from home. And the Asheville Mountains are, I think, a little bit like the Catskills, which are just kind of north of the city here and where a lot of people go back and forth to get out of the city. So when I need to see the mountains, I'll escape to the Catskills for a little bit.
Oh, that's wonderful. And I know my daughter, having lived in New York for a while, life there is so different than what we experience, say, down in Florida, where so many people, they don't even need to own a car, and they take public transportation, the subway everywhere, and living in really basically a small island, as you do in Manhattan, everything is so compressed, and people walk a lot there, don't they?
Yeah, you know, E.B. White, the writer, said one time that Manhattan is 100 small towns squished together, which is how it feels. I mean, the people on my block and in this little neighborhood all recognize each other. They talk to each other when they're in the stores. It really does feel like each block is its own little tiny town. So it's not as cosmopolitan maybe as people might think, but it's still a lot of people squished in one place.
Well, everybody has their favorite bodega, and of course, Shake Shack is probably still ruling the area town for a lot of places to go get something to eat. I love stopping in the street vendors and getting a hot dog down there. That's always a lot of fun.
Yeah, there's just a library of good food. It's crazy. I live near Columbia University, so there's all kinds of international food here that mm-hmm. is amazing that they're catering to the students. And we're lucky to get some of that overflow.
Well, if you just tuned in, I'm talking to Emily Bells. Emily is a writer, and the real main reason, and what we'll be spending the rest of our time talking about today, is the fact that Emily has written what I consider to be groundbreaking in terms of knowledge and in terms of a real help to the questions that people are going around and around about on this issue of the COVID-19 virus. I think I speak for a lot of people, Emily, that would say that when all of this broke about a year ago, and the idea of a virus, first of all, just started kind of settling in our minds, and we had those nightly updates from the task force, and we're hearing all of this and the expected numbers of people dying. And then as the spring went on, lockdowns, businesses being shuttered. All of that seemed to be just a horrible thing. And then summer brought a little bit of optimism. And then in the fall, this thing takes on a new life again. And so along this path, all of the talk about a needed vaccine and then an efforts to get the vaccine done as quickly as it was accomplished, it seemed to cause a lot of consternation. And I'm sure you found a lot of people that in your research that would have initially thought, ain't no way I'm going to take a vaccine that has been only a month in development and the rest of the time in basic trials. That seems, I think, to most people in the beginning, it seemed to be too fast. Would that be your take?
Yeah, and I think that's very understandable. I mean, I have heard from a lot of readers who were concerned about it. I think one thing that stands out is that throughout this pandemic, people have heard different things from authorities about what they're supposed to do and what the science is saying and wear a mask, don't wear a mask. Initially, you know, in New York, they told us not to wear a mask the first few months to conserve masks for the first responders. And then suddenly it became a mask mandate. So I think because of this kind of conflicting information from authorities, people also are skeptical of the efficacy of the vaccine, the safety of the vaccine, and again, as you said, how quickly it came together. So my goal in writing this piece was just to pull back the curtain a little bit on what the process for developing the vaccine was. You know, our approach is just to try to do reporting and not beat people over the head with this is what you should do. That's really not our mission, to write columns on why you should get a vaccine. Instead, we want to write stories and interview people and get information to our readers so they understand and can make a good choice for themselves. And I would say that, you know, one thing I was thinking about as I was hearing some of these concerns about vaccines is just a conversation I had with a friend of mine who's an ICU nurse here in the city. And she was saying, well, it makes sense that there has been conflicting information throughout this pandemic, because that is how science works. You know, we have theories and we test them out and we see what works. And I think one thing that I would conclude from having done the research on this particular article is that they have gone through the scientific process. They have had these theories. They've tested them out actually over years. When you're talking about mRNA technology, and then they put the vaccines through these huge trials that are much larger than any trials we've had before. So I think hopefully the details are useful for people when they're trying to make the decision for themselves.
Now, I think the thing that people have to start getting in their mind is a new set of vocabulary, some terms that are helpful in understanding what this vaccine does. I think most of us, I certainly would have been in this group, most of us would have thought that all vaccines are kind of like what we would have understood growing up, my age especially, from the polio vaccine on, the measles, where a vaccine always, this is the kind of mindset. Now, this is actually not true to the mRNA vaccine, but most of us would think that this vaccine would have actually a live component of the COVID-19 virus. And just a little bit of it, and the idea that we all grew up understanding when we would get inoculated and get vaccinated was the idea that you're injecting into your body a little bit of whatever live germ, live virus that we're talking about. And the idea is that your body would instantly attack that and build antibodies around it, and thereby basically giving you a little bit of an inoculation against it, maybe ultimately then becoming where you're not susceptible to getting the disease. That's the idea behind that kind of vaccine. But the mRNA that you studied and that you wrote about is an entirely different breed. And you're right, it's been 30 years in development. So how would you describe, when you're just sitting around having coffee with somebody, the difference in the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine? How would you describe that?
Yeah, it's something I had to learn about myself, too. I had the same thought about vaccines as you did. So mRNA is kind of a wildly new technology. I mean, it's as you said, it's been 30 years in the making, but it's new in terms of the breakthrough that we've had the last few years in delivering the mRNA. So essentially what it does is make a protein in the cell that will defend against the coronavirus. So that, as you said, there's no coronavirus in the mRNA vaccines, which both the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines are mRNA vaccines. So there's no chance of you getting the coronavirus from the vaccines. It's chemically impossible for that to happen. The other thing that's interesting about mRNA is that it can be customized. So hopefully with this breakthrough of, creating mRNA vaccines for the coronavirus, if we have another pandemic and these vaccines prove effective as it appears they have, we will be able to put vaccines together for future viruses much more quickly. With this vaccine, they were able to customize the vaccines maybe a week or two after they got the information from China about what the virus looked like. Mm-hmm. So they just plug that mRNA information into their systems and they can kind of print out a vaccine. So in a way it's a much simpler process. It's very exciting for what we may be able to do in the future. Although even though we had these vaccines developed within a week or two of getting the information, it still goes through the same safety and testing process that any other vaccine would go through. So it still does take some time, as we've seen, to bring this to market. But I'm hoping that adds some comfort to people that, the warp speed part of Operation Warp Speed was not in terms of the safety and development part of the vaccine process.
I think that's an important point that you've just brought up, because anytime you hear Operation Warp Speed, again, when you couple that with the fact that most of us have knowledge, the little bit of knowledge that we have about vaccines always tells us that these take years to develop, not days, not months. And yet mm-hmm. Operation Warp Speed, as it's talked about, it just, I believe, freaked a lot of people out. And there were a lot of people who were thinking that, my goodness, what is being done? This is going to be forced upon us. This is going to be something that we all have to take. And is it going to alter our DNA, our cell structure? These are the kind of questions that I think people are jumping to. And I think a lot of them might have been jumping to those things, understandably. But the good news is, and this is something that I first learned from my friend Dave Zanotti at the Public Square, who has a friend who is a doctor, and he spent a couple of days on his radio show talking about the fact that this is really great science for a believer, great science, great technology, and that we need to be thankful for it. And so that's really something wonderful that you've done in writing about this, because it does not, first of all, have the COVID-19 strain in it. Secondly, it does not even go inside the cell, as you wrote about. It kind of builds this thing called the spike protein that you were mentioning. And the body then from that jumps into action, builds antibodies from this thing. And while there are still questions that they don't know about the long-term effects of how long the protection lasts in your body, those will yet be learned. But the good news is this is an entirely, completely safe vaccine.
Yes, and I would add that there's a lot of drugs that we take every day that don't have long-term safety data. I think because there's so much scrutiny on these vaccines, we're paying attention to every part of the process, but there's many other drugs on the market now that we kind of have faith in that also don't have long-term safety data. So obviously we want that information, and the FDA is going to be seeking that out, and the trial participants are still part of the vaccine trials for the next 2 years as they try to get that information. But it is not that unusual for a drug to be authorized like this in an emergency situation with the amount of safety data that they do have already.
Well, I know that there's a lot of production that's still going on, and Operation Warp Speed now has kind of shifted gears into getting the finished product that has been approved, especially these two, Pfizer and Moderna. Those are the two that we're talking about today that uses this modified RNA or mRNA technology. And it is something that has been deemed by not only doctors and scientists, but again, the research that you guys at World have done. And also, there's a wonderful article that I'm going to be putting the link on our Facebook page for The Shepherd that has been put out by the Gospel Coalition. And I tell you what, when you read that article, your article, Emily, I think there's going to be a lot of people that will read these articles and walk away from it with a sigh of relief. And I think that is going to be one of the things that your 2021, Emily, I pray that you'll be able to realize how God used you in a marvelous way in writing this article and bringing peace to people's hearts about something that is very important. My guest is Emily Bells, and we're going to be back with her for one more segment coming up in just a moment. And we'll be talking about some of the particulars that Emily had to study and some of the people that she talked to and how that goes for a writer such as Emily for World Magazine. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike right here on The Shepherd. What a privilege it is for me to be able to talk to Emily Bells. Emily is senior writer for World Magazine, and if you've just tuned in, my, you're going to have to get the podcast and listen to the story. Emily's uncle, one of the founders of World Magazine, and her mother is still an international correspondent. Emily has, with her mom, traveled the world, and got to see literally the world through World Magazine. And just the ability to have all of that kind of happening around her, still not dreaming that she would one day be a writer herself. And now here she is, and writing articles like the one that's on the COVID-19 vaccine. It is available. I highly recommend it. We'll have the web address from Emily coming up in a moment about how you can see her article, read it online, and really consider subscribing to World Magazine because it is good, and we all need some form of, I guess, communication and news that is trustworthy. And in these times, honestly, Emily, you're working for a great company, but you guys are increasingly on the rare side, I would say, to where you could have a company that you work for and you feel good about, and you know that the people who are leading your company are doing it the right way. And that's such a big deal. So I know you're happy working for such a fine organization.
Yes, it's been a real privilege, and I feel like it's a privilege every time that people agree to an interview. I know that it's harder for people to open their lives up, but that's my daily life is getting permission from people to share their lives with me and their expertise. So I'm really thankful for all of that.
Well, your article opens up with a healthcare worker and her story of wanting to be a part of the trials for this vaccine. And I love the fact that she even paused after she agreed to do it and say, what have I done? What have I done? What have I done to myself? I'm going to be injected with something, and maybe I get the placebo, because any of these trials, there's usually a double-blind aspect to it. Sometimes people get the real vaccine, and when they're in the trials, sometimes people are part of the study group that think they're getting the vaccine, and they get a placebo. What was that like for you to learn and to hear people's stories?
Yeah, so she was like every other trial participant I talked to who had that same reaction where they initially, after they signed up, they got cold feet of saying, why am I getting into this brand new technology? Why am I getting into a vaccine trial? But then they did research on mRNA. I mean, it was just, when I interviewed people, it was the same story over and over, people who participated in these trials, that they were concerned about potential reactions, allergic reactions, and all the rest. But once they had looked into the technology, they were much more comforted. And all the people I talked to were in the phase 3 of the trial, which means, you know, phase 1 and phase 2 are the people who subjected themselves to the safety tests and all the rest. So they're kind of the big heroes, I would say. But the phase 3 was about seeing the efficacy of the vaccine. And so those were the really big trials, the ones that we all heard about. So these people figured that the safety trials had already taken place. And so doing these phase 3 trials were a little bit more secure. And as we talked about earlier with the mRNA technology, it doesn't contain the virus. And so that eliminates a lot of the reactions that you can sometimes see from vaccines, the negative reactions, because pretty much all it's doing is building one protein in your cell. And yes, as we also talked about, it does not enter your nucleus, and so it does not alter your DNA. But she had done, this is Dr. Givler, who's in her 60s. She had done all the research on this kind of stuff before she wanted to get into the trial. And she decided that it was safe enough, and she was exposed to enough patients who have COVID in her daily work, that it was worth the risk to be part of this trial.
You know, the article that you've written, and of course includes not only these wonderful stories, and I love the fact that it is so down-to-earth human. I felt the questions that your participants, those that you interviewed, you really brought us along, not only on the information, but you brought us along on the emotion that they felt and what they discovered as they were going through these phase 2 and phase 3 parts of this study. And especially the lady that you started off talking about, the healthcare worker who actually had to drive. I think it was at least an hour and a half to take part in these tests in Louisiana. Yep. And she would drive to Shreveport, and on the second booster shot, or the booster shot, which would be the second inoculation, she kind of had a feeling that day that she was actually a part of the vaccine group, because she did have a little bit of a reaction, but it was mild and it was short-lived, right?
Yeah, she had a very normal immune response, which is what you want. And that second dose, she got really fatigued that whole day after the dose. And so she's shared that with other people, like her patients she wants to get the vaccine. She said, you know, be prepared to take the day off work if you need to when you get the second shot, just because you might have that immune response. So she made it very concrete. And I think having somebody, you know, when you talk about vaccines with people, they listen to people's stories around them. You know, I think a lot of what I've heard from readers when they are skeptical about taking a vaccine is that they know someone who had a bad reaction to a vaccine, or they know someone who told them something about vaccines, and, or, you know, had a certain experience with vaccines. And that tends to be how we make decisions. And so I think hearing stories of people who have taken these vaccines months ago and are still alive and with us and haven't had their genetic material changed or anything terrible happen, I think is useful because we do listen to people that we know and that we can identify with when we make decisions like this.
And that is very commonplace, and that I think is just the right way that we should. This is a recommendation that is functionally going to help people get past those phobias, because I tell you what, no matter what we don't understand about the coronavirus, and we do know that aspects of the coronavirus is not new. It's been around for years and years. It's been studied, but the COVID-19 strain, this particular highly contagious and different strain of the coronavirus that has so impacted so many people. I'm telling you, if a person started off the beginning of 2020 skeptical, thinking, nah, this is just nothing more than the cold, well, I think enough has happened. Enough of us have gotten sick. Enough of us have lost family members that this needs to not be looked that way. It needs to be seen that this is something that demands a response. And thankfully, this vaccine that you've written so extensively about is something that is going to help people, and it is safe. And I'm grateful that I'm able to feel good about that myself. And I have to tell you, Emily, I was one of those skeptics in the beginning.
Yeah, I think even if you are a skeptic now, and if you think the virus is not as serious as some people are making it out to be, I think the vaccine is still a way out of the lifestyle that we have right now. And I think you can see it that way, even if you're skeptical about how serious it is, because we're not going to live under mask mandates for the rest of our lives. And so this is a way for that not to happen, even if you think, that it's not, that COVID is not as serious as it is. But I also think something unique about this vaccine rollout from other vaccines is that people will have time to think through this. There's several months before most people are going to be able to take the first dose. And so I think since it's such a gradual thing where you'll gradually see people around you getting the vaccine, it'll be easier to join in and get the vaccine yourself, because you'll have time to think about it. You'll have time to see people. I mean, we've already had, tens of thousands of people in the U.S. who've been vaccinated through the trials. Mm-hmm. And so you'll slowly be able to see the effects of it before you yourself have to make that decision. And so I think that maybe will help with people who are concerned or want to do more research on it.
One of the questions, I don't know if you know the answer to this or not, but people who have actually had COVID, will they be asked to get the vaccine as well? Would that be a good thing for them, or would that be necessary? What are the thoughts there?
Yeah, I think generally what I've heard is that they do want you to get the vaccine, mainly because it would be like a booster shot for your your COVID immunity. They don't know how long that full immunity lasts, either from having had COVID or from the vaccine. And so I think you might get pushed a little further down the line in terms of how they're prioritizing the vaccine if you've recently had COVID. But I think that eventually this year, you will probably want to get a dose of the vaccine.
Can you give us your website for World Magazine and any other links that you would like to pass along?
Yeah, so World's website is WNG.org. It's chock full of, we've done more coverage on the vaccine. We've written about, some of the, how embryonic stem cell lines have been used with the vaccine. And in these two cases with Moderna and Pfizer's vaccines, they have not used them in their research and development. But we try to get into a lot more details of the vaccines and other reporting. So my piece is just one of many that we've done. So I encourage you to look into more of the reporting that we have on our website about vaccines.
I think that's a very important thing to end on, is to receive the good news that those that are part of the Pfizer and also the Moderna vaccines, stem cells from, there's people who are concerned that the stem cells from aborted fetal tissue was used in this vaccine, and that is not true. There are no live stem cells. I love the way one article said no one had to die to get this vaccine. And I think that's an important aspect that we need to remember, that this vaccine is free from those kinds of live stem cells, and grateful to God for that. So that is something that is, again, a very positive note about this vaccine. Emily Bells, give us that web address one more time for World Magazine.
World is WNG.org, and that stands for World News Group.
World News Group, WNG.org. And Emily, thank you for the time. Thank you for your hard work in this article. And I just pray that really hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people, I'm going to pray for that, read your article and are helped and educated by it. And thank you again for all your hard work.
Oh, it's been a real pleasure to be with you.
Thanks for being with me today. I'll catch you next time on Afternoons with Mike.